Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9. Here at that conference, Open Spaces, talking to some of the speakers. We're pretty excited to have Corey House. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Seth. Good
so
to see
what
you.
Do you do, man? You do all sorts of crazy cool stuff.
I do too many different things. I have three or four jobs.
That's right. But you do some Pluralsight courses, yeah?
I do, yes.
What's the latest one that's coming out?
Coming out this week is Building Applications with React and Flux.
Oh, so can we talk about that? Is that what you're talking about here too?
Well, if you'd like to, yeah, sure. I'd be willing, yes.
So what is React and what is Flux?
Okay, so React is a library from Facebook, uh-huh, and it is used for front-end development.
Okay.
Good for the JavaScript developers.
Okay.
If you're someone who likes Angular, who likes Knockout, who likes Ember, this is a competitor to those.
Man, it's like in our industry, it's like we have gone 0 days without a new JavaScript framework.
That is becoming the joke that I see in almost every JavaScript talk now.
So
it's gotten out of hand.
How do you start to differentiate between these things, and how do you know if one is quality and one isn't? How?
Well, it's funny you say that because my talk here at that conf is called Why React, because
okay,
I'm finding more and more that I go to conferences because I want the answer to the why. There's so many different ways to learn the how now.
Okay.
I can go out and I can grab a book.
Sure.
I can go watch courses online, watch videos, those sorts of things.
Uh-huh.
But conferences are this awesome place for me to go learn something that I'm not familiar with at all.
Just
sell me on the why, and then I will go dig deeper later.
So is React and Flux two different things, or are they the same thing with different parts?
Good question. So they're two different things.
Okay.
And React is a front-end library that is analogous, very competitive with Knockout. It
okay
is lightweight. It's just really focused on the view, and
okay
it's just a way to create components that run in the browser.
I see.
So you're working in HTML and JavaScript.
So let's talk about then, why would we use React instead of Angular?
Okay. Oh, here we go. Well, let's just
throw down the gauntlet. Am I like throwing you on the bus?
No.
I don't know them either very well. I know
yeah
what they do, and I know how they do it and why, but I don't know enough about React. I've watched a Pluralsight course on Angular.
Yeah.
That's like that's my knowledge. Right?
That counts.
So it would be nice to maybe from that point of view get a sense of how React is different or better or
okay
different.
And it's a really good question because frankly, Angular right now is the most popular option out there. It
right
just seems everybody's using it and mm-hmm talking about it. But React is getting a lot of attention because of a couple of unique things that it does. One thing that it does is it has this idea of, hey, how about we put all of our markup within JavaScript? And at first that sounds crazy. That's what JSX is. Effectively, let me create my component, write it all in JavaScript, and then I will compile my markup down to plain old JavaScript. So JSX looks just like HTML, but it compiles down to JavaScript.
So in React, the claim to fame there is that we're sort of putting the markup into the actual functions.
Yeah, that you are commingling your markup and all of your other component code right there, which sounds crazy at first. And this is where it's interesting because people can't see that off camera is Uncle Bob sitting here as I'm about to talk about commingling concerns. So if I begin to sweat, that is why.
If you're swearing in the background, that's Uncle Bob. He's up next, incidentally. So.
And this is what's crazy because the very first reaction that people have when they look at React is, hey, you've taken what should be a separate concern, which is my markup, and
uh-huh
you've intermingled it together with my logic for my view, and should that really happen? And what I've come to realize is there's a real benefit to this, because what you have is, effectively, JavaScript and HTML have always been peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
They had to go together to really be powerful. So by putting them together in the same file, what we found is we get compile time error checking on our markup. And this is what's beautiful. And I can show,
I don't know
how we switch. Okay, so I just have a simple demo
app
sitting
over
here.
You can look at the screen, and if Uncle Bob shakes his head, that means I'm just going
to. We're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I have up is a simple application that is built in React and Flux.
Okay.
And over here on the right, you can see it sitting up here. And then I have some code over here on the left. What I have is the header component. This header component displays what you see up here, my home, authors, mm-hmm, courses, about, links. Now, what I also have running is right over here in the terminal, I have a gulp process running that is linting my files, that's
got
running
it
JavaScript, and it's compiling all of my JSX.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been talking about JSX. This is JSX right here. What you can see is this is a JavaScript file, but starting here on line 14 and coming down here to line 25, that is JSX. And you look at it and you go, well, it looks like HTML. And it does. It looks almost identical to HTML. It has a few minor differences, like I have to say class name instead of class because class is a reserved
sure
word in JavaScript. But what happens is this all compiles down to plain old JavaScript.
Hold on. So is there some like pre-processing step that's happening when you're
exactly.
doing the gulp? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, okay. And the beauty of this pre-processing step, this is awesome, because if I come in here, for instance, say that I forgot to close my LI tag mm-hmm. right here, I'm going to hit save. Now watch, over here on the right-hand side, we're not going to see anything change mm-hmm. because there was a compile time error that just occurred. And if we look in my console, look at this. Expected corresponding JSX closing tag for LI on this line. And that is a revelation for me. Because if you're somebody who has worked in Angular, who has worked in Knockout, then what you typically have is, I made some kind of a typo in my markup, but I don't know about it.
And
I forgot to close a tag.
Everything.
Yeah, because browsers historically have been really liberal in what they accept.
Yes.
So because of that, by leaning on the browser and putting your logic within the HTML, that has made it really difficult for us to debug things in some of these alternatives that have come previously. And that's, to me, one of the big wins is when I work in React and what I tend to get is a fail fast scenario. The minute that I've made a mistake, I can see it right here on my command line, and I know it couldn't compile my JSX.
And all I know is that for those that do JavaScript development, sometimes you just have no idea what the heck is happening.
Yes, I found, sadly, one of my debugging practices has been, as I would code along, is in other libraries and frameworks, I've ended up just hitting Control Z until I could get it to run again. I go, okay, now let me move forward. Now, given that is not, that is obviously not a TDD style,
no,
right?
No, it's just, it's...
But it is a recognition that that sometimes things break in very...
Subtle,
unhelpful ways with a lot of these JavaScript frameworks. When you're building SPAs, it has been a rather painful process.
So let's go back to the code here. Let's see if I can find some questions here that I can ask. Because it looks like React... You're making little components.
I am, yes. So what we are seeing here is a component that just covers this. These four links up here. And that's why this file is called header.js.
Okay.
And the beauty of React, and this is, if you're somebody that works in Angular, it's a lot like directives. Uh-huh. Angular has directives. The thing that I like about React over Angular is there is less ceremony, and it feels more natural to compose components together in React than working with directives in Angular today. Now, given Angular 2 looks like it's going to shift a lot of that around. Right now, I'm really finding that React is a low-friction way to create components that are composable.
Got it. So my problem with these types of projects, and this might be might be just my issue, is setting up the actual folder structure and file structure. Is there a Yeoman generator that gets this stuff going?
Yes. Yes,
well,
there is.
Can you show us? Yeah, I mean, seriously.
It's funny you say that, because one thing that I set up for my course is a starter pack that I call the React with Flux Starter Kit.
So we didn't talk about Flux. What is the Flux part?
Okay, so React is getting one part of this taken care of. React is effectively the V in MVC.
Okay.
It's just the view. And to some degree, the controller, depending on how you structure things.
Okay.
I won't go down that road, but I get more into that in the course. What Flux is handling is your data flows.
Okay.
And Flux has this whole idea of that is very different than what's going on right now. So if you're someone that works in Knockout, in Ember, in Angular, then you're comfortable with the idea of two-way bindings. And when a piece of text changes in a text box, you know that view model behind the scenes is going to change immediately.
Yeah.
And that's convenient. Well, that also, from Facebook's experience, caused some issues, because they found there were times when the UI would change, but they don't necessarily want the view model to change immediately. You might want to run some code on that to transform it. It can also lead to things like when this view model changes, it fires off a change in this other view model, which fires off a change in this view.
With the amount of people doing that stuff on Facebook, it probably caused all sorts of server issues.
Yes. Yeah. So, and it's not that that's a fundamentally broken pattern, but it is a risk with that pattern. And I will say the last single page app I built was around 100 JavaScript files. It was a very large project. And one thing we did run into was
a lot of JavaScript in there.
Yeah, well.
Sorry,
let me summarize it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so the thing we ran into was needing to communicate among those view models and this view model, when it changes, I also need this other one to know about it so that this other piece of the UI mm-hmm. can be updated. Now, we ended up solving that with a pub/sub pattern.
Right.
That's one way to go about it. But effectively with Flux, what it does is it says, What if we created unidirectional data flows instead? What if when the UI updates, it just fires off an action? And then that action could be something like, when I clicked this button, that fires off a delete user action. And you can think of an action as just this long list of all the potential things that can happen in our application. Because what happens when you build an app is you say, it's not, when I click that button, it's not like just one view model cares about that. It might be that a lot of different view models care that that thing just happened. So if there are a bunch of different parts of my application that care about it, wouldn't it be nice if this one action occurred and then a dispatcher sent that information out to everybody that
cared? Sort of like a pub-sub, like
it mini. It is. It is very much like pub-sub, but the one fundamental difference with Flux is that once your stores subscribe to find out about these things, they will find out about any kind of action that happens in the system, and then they can decide whether to act on that action.
I see. So you're subscribing to all events that might happen,
yes.
All publications.
So it's a little different than a traditional pub sub where you're being more specific.
Does that cause like some kind of computational bottleneck? Because everything's getting notifications about stuff.
No, not from my experience. And the given there are a lot of different Flux implementations too. But effectively, Facebook's Flux implementation just uses a switch statement to get this done. It says, hey, let me look at the action type. And if, for instance, oh, you just clicked delete user, I don't care about that one. So I'm not going to do anything. It's a no op for me.
So it might, I see. So this might be even a better way of saying a couple of things have happened. Or I'm interested in a couple of different things that happen. And so you can be really granular about the kinds of events that actually happen, right?
Yes.
And then you can say, okay, it feels like these are really granular, but now a lot of the sort of the models or when you're doing stuff, the view models can take these things and say, I'm interested in delete user and log off at the same time. And so I'm going to do some stuff there.
Yeah, so the beauty of this pattern is if I hand you my application and you want to know everything that goes on in that application, you can see a complete list of every action that occurs in that system. And then for that matter, if you say, well, I just would like to know who cares about this delete user action occurring, well, I can trace through and I can see that this store cares about it and this store cares about it. So it becomes easier to reason about the application than the more implicit style that tends to happen in a traditional MVC style.
So let's see if I got this right. React is the view and maybe a little bit of the view model. Did I get that right?
React is the view and a little bit of the controller.
Controller, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Controller.
Whereas effectively the view model is replaced by something like the store. And I really didn't get into the store. I glossed over that a bit. But what actions do is an action is fired. There's a centralized dispatcher that sends out that action to all of the stores that care. And effectively a store is a lot like a view model, but a store contains a lot of data. But unlike a view model, a store isn't specific to a single view. A store is just a centralized place where your data sits. So for this example app that I showed here, the stores that I'm using, I have an author store.
Okay.
And I have I guess my mouse freezes when I pull back over here for a second. But I have an author store and I have a course store because those are the two core pieces of data that I work with. And then the assumption is different. So I can see author data here, I can see course data here. But the assumption is that different pieces of my application may be interested in this data. So you just put all the store data in one spot.
So one of the challenges I find with this type of development is that sometimes things get conflated a little too much. And so when we're talking about stores, are we talking about the actual back-end store, or is this on the client side where it's doing stuff in a spa-like way?
That's a great question. This is all client side.
Okay.
So anything that I'm doing here will ultimately end up probably making an AJAX call in a traditional application.
So as you fill up the store, when do you know, let's push this down to the back end?
That is the responsibility traditionally of the action.
Okay.
So when I click that delete user action, the action comes in and then I right there say, all right, if I need to hit the server, that's when I will do so. And I will take that async response and when it's completed, maybe I'll fire off another action and that action would be called user deleted.
Yeah.
And then any UI that cares about that is going to be notified.
I see. So then you have to be really careful about how much you're, because you might not need everything on the client side. And you probably shouldn't put everything on the client side. I've heard people like using the session state in like really vulgar ways.
Oh yes.
I use the word vulgar on purpose.
Yes.
You don't store, so you gotta be careful about the type of memory you're expending on the client side.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using stores, right?
Yeah, and that's one philosophy that I've had is if I didn't think I needed to do something on the client, processing on the client, then I would prefer to do it on the server.
Sure.
I would rather make a server call. And even, for example, when I know that I need a certain shape of JSON to bootstrap the application, I would rather do that processing on the server than have some API call come down and then do transformations on the client. Because effectively, I have to remember that a lot of people are going to be running my application on a smartphone.
Yeah.
And maybe a fairly weak device. Yeah. So anything that I can do to take some of that weight off of it is helpful.
Okay, so we digressed. We started out with, okay, so how do we generate this? But I wanted to get some React stuff in there. So let's see how we get these things started.
Yeah, so the composition story in React is really cool. Because what can happen here is I have this header and I can go look at its parent. Let me just pull up my navigation over here. So the entire application just sits right here. And this is my app, and what we can see is I compose the header, I have a route handler, because I'm using a React router, which is the most popular routing library for React. And then I have my footer that sits down here and renders this little simple footer. But so the nice thing is this ends up reading a lot like HTML5 custom elements, if you looked into the new custom elements specification. Mm-hmm. So this effectively makes your markup more semantic, which I really like as well. Now, given you get this sort of goodness elsewhere, if it's a similar idea to what you do with Angular directives or creating components in Knockout as well.
So I am like the anti-magic guy. I'd love to see what this looks like when it's like rendered in a JavaScript.
Oh,
is it just calling the files?
So that, yeah, and we can absolutely see this. So if I go over here and I inspect element, we can look at the actual markup. And, oh wow, I just dragged markup around when I intended to slide, but it let me. What I can see is, so these are all just plain old HTML at this point.
I see.
And if I looked at, I think I may have a slide that's even an easier way to show this. Do I have, so this is my, this is my web components talk. There we go. Let me jump over here.
Multitasking. I
absolutely.
Love
there we go. So here was a little snippet. Oh, here I can't show you my jokes before talk.
No. This is not live. So this will happen way after.
Excellent. So on top, what we have is JSX, and you can see I'm defining a table with a header, and then the body down here, and then I'm mapping over and calling another function. But what happens is JSX gets compiled down to plain old JavaScript calls. What I end up getting here is just a bunch of calls to react.createElement. So JSX is completely optional. If I wanted to, I could write my whole UI just saying react.createElement. Here's the name of the element that I want. Here's some properties that I'd like
to
pass into it.
That's a lot of typing, though.
It would be, yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. There are a few people that do that, but for the most part, JSX is recommended, especially if you're working with designers, because it looks pretty much like HTML. It's really easy for everybody to work with.
Now let's start a React with Flux project from scratch. Is that possible? Is there a Yeoman generator? Ooh. Is there a guidance? Is there a guide where I can be like, hey, I'll go here and this is how I should set up the file structure?
That's a lot to cover. I don't want to overwhelm people. So to give you an idea, this is I feel like the new world that we live in. Mm-hmm. And the new world is that there's a lot of tooling to make the front end happen. So that's why I created this starter kit.
Okay.
And this is a starter kit that I created specifically for this course, because I realized effectively, if you're going to be productive today as a developer on the front end, you're going to want a build process. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to lint your JavaScript. You're going to want some kind of a process to bundle and minify your CSS and your JavaScript. There's a lot of different things to handle. So none of that is absolutely required to build an app in React and Flux, but you almost certainly want all of that to make it happen. So you are right that, to me, things like Yeoman are the right answer.
Okay.
We could go down that road, but I'd probably fumble through, and I might lose people along the way because I just don't have it
so
ready
the
and
best thing to do
demo,
then is if you want to do a React with Flux, take a look at this particular GitHub, watch the Pluralsight course once it's out, and maybe even find a good Yeoman generator to start.
Yeah, and there are plenty of great Yeoman generators out there. So to clarify, I created this one simply because it did exactly what we needed to do to get this course rolling. What this really summarizes is, any time that you're going to be building a rich internet application with these new technologies, you probably need to stand up a lot of different things. And Yeoman is a nice way to get that started.
Okay.
I agree.
Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us, Corey.
Thanks for having me, Seth. This
good
was fun.
Good luck on your talks, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for watching. We learned about React and Flux here at that conference in the Open Spaces room. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Mm-hmm.